Blog Talk Radio.
Network of David Duenas. I'm your host, Steve Canine Kim, and joining us as always from his palatial estate up north in San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, man. I feel like I've been hanging out with you all day watching you on BN Sports. Good Monday to you, sir.
Yeah, first of all, sorry about that. Didn't mean to ruin your broadcast. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Once again, that number will open up the phone lines in about 15 to 20 minutes, 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a question via Twitter or a comment, you can do so, Gabriel_Montoya or at Steve UCN Live. And Gabe, it's a big week this week from Macau, the heart of Asia on HBO pay-per-view. It's the return of the Pac-Man as he makes his yearly soiree or jaunt into China for the WBO welterweight title. Manny Pacquiao takes on the real-life Rocky, Chris Algieri, with the record of 20-0-8 knockouts. Also, the semi-main on this pay-per-view undercard for the WBA junior welterweight title, Jesse Vargas versus Antonio DeMarco. And rounding out this pay-per-view bill, appearances by the prodigy Vasyl Lomachenko and Zhao Xueming. Gabe, I know this for a fact, that if you were a gambling man, you would be laying down some money on the original odds, which were about 14 or 15 to 1 on Chris Algieri, correct?
Oh, yeah. I'm a little mad at myself for not putting a little coin down early on. I really like his chances. I mean, we'll blow my pick right off the bat, but I just think he's – you know, the thing that's scaring me, though, is that there's so much press with him. People are just – I mean, it's just Algieri overload. And I kind of wonder, is this – are they really pushing him on me? And, you know, his big wins – haven't been against the super slick, super fast fighters, and they've been right-handers. Is this Donnie Lalonde 2.0, or is this the guy that's a legit threat to Manny Pacquiao?
That's an interesting comparison. The other golden boy before Oscar De La Hoya and after Art Aragon. Now, there's a difference, though. I understand the comparison, Gabe, but we have to remember – when Donnie Lalonde was lined up for Ray Leonard, there was some scale adjusting and some gerrymandering that really put Donnie Lalonde at a disadvantage because he was a light heavyweight that was forced to squeeze down a la Chad Dawson to, I believe, 168
yeah.
or 169, and it gave Ray Leonard a very big advantage outside the obvious one of talent. Now, I think Chris Algieri brings some physical difficulties and some stylistic problem for Manny Pacquiao. Number one, it's funny, and I wrote this in my article today, Manny Pacquiao is a basketball player in his spare time, but every jump ball to Chris Algieri, he'd probably lose because he's a lot shorter. We're talking about a 5 or 6 inch difference, a guy with pretty good footwork, very educated left hand, and he's long. But with that said, here's the issue. Chris Algieri, in 20 professional fights, only has 8 knockouts, and a lot of those fights are when you're early on gonna score those knockouts in your first, let's say, 10 or so, when the matchmaking is very soft. He didn't even really accomplish that, and I just wonder, without the threat of a hard, solid, straight up the middle right hand against a whirlwind southpaw that could still bounce in and out and still likes to attack for the most part, just wonder, Gabe, does Algieri have the firepower to keep Pacquiao honest?
That's the thing, and does he have the chin to keep him, you know, to take the shots and keep coming? I mean, Provodnikov, I think, is a pretty heavy hitter, and he got put down by, you know, those, you know, took a knee the second time, but got put down pretty hard on a counter hook, and went down. But he's clear headed. He gets up fast. He's actually, you know, Algieri is adding weight for this fight, so I think that's actually kind of to his advantage. Since he, one, has a, you know, PhD in avocados, but two, he's a taller guy, and I think that'll allow him to be kind of hydrate and not kill himself a little bit. I think he's going to be stronger for it. But you're right. You know, the question is, can he get respect with his hands? Can he hit Pacquiao hard enough and often enough with that jab. You know, most people say that, you know, you need the straight right hand to beat a southpaw. That should be your lead weapon and not the jab. And I couldn't disagree more. Algieri is a big believer in his jab. He thinks he can win the whole fight with his jab. But, you know, when you're facing an opposite-handed fighter, as these two guys are, your lead hand is actually closer to the opponent as opposed to, you know, when you're kind of fighting a mirror image of yourself. So I think Algieri is going to get his jab going early and often. He loves to, as he says, you know, change levels and go down and go and come up. And he said, you know, in regards to his power, that, you know, in getting respect, I've never hit anybody that didn't respect me for doing it. And I think he's going to have that with Pacquiao here. I think the big key is going to be the inside game, and if Algieri can make him pay with uppercuts, because Pacquiao's wide open for uppercuts. If he can accomplish, you know, get some things done on the inside, or at least tie up Manny so he doesn't work, and then kind of work in uppercuts and make him pay by at least round three or four, I think Algieri's got a great shot. Big question is, can he get a decision?
Here's the issue, and this is one of the things that I wonder. Are people playing value, or is this really smart money? Our mutual friend, JP,
yeah,
who checks on odds for entertainment purposes only, of course, says to me that the odds originally on this fight were right around 14 to 16 to 1. When I texted him last week and said, what are the numbers on this fight now? He said, Steve, they're about half of that now. In other words, they're about 7 or 8 to 1. Which means all the money has gone on one side, and that's the kid from Huntington Beach, New York. But let's be honest about it. If you're going to bet this fight, and really boxing wagering more than any other sport is about value, there is no value in betting on 15-to-1 favorites. I'm just wondering, the people that are betting on Algieri, are they just taking a lark, or do they really believe this guy has what it takes to upset the apple cart? Here's what I think the problem is for Algieri. Yes, him and Provodnikov, in talking about Pacquiao, are polar opposites in terms of their stance and a lot of other things. The biggest difference to me is volume punching and foot speed. Provodnikov has heavy, heavy hands. He also has heavy feet. And there were times when Algieri was able to skate around that ring, use effective lateral movement, and really offset a lot of the stuff Provodnikov did because he had to plant and set on his heels. I've always said Manny Pacquiao's greatest, most underrated skill is his ability to punch at odd angles and at all angles and be like a cat. He's never really out of balance in terms of punching, and he could literally punch almost up in the air, going backwards and making it work. I think that's going to be a problem, that I think that Pacquiao, if he is who we think he still is, which is a reasonable facsimile of the guy from 2009 and 10, I think he still has the right stuff, and I think the ability to close distance will be the difference. And, Gabe, let's look at the politics of this. Again, we would not be doing our job if we did not mention this. Asia is the home turf, the home canvas of Top Rank and Manny Pacquiao. This is a Top Rank promotion. Algieri is great from a marketing standpoint because he's the white guy that could speak to the Eastern Seaboard press. But he's not the house fighter. I find it hard to believe because, again, me and you are split. I thought Provodnikov won June 14th. Obviously, the judges looked at it your way. Gabe, let's be honest. That dynamic probably will not exist Saturday night in Macau.
I think those are excellent points. You know, the way Provodnikov kind of leaned in and was waiting around for the big power shot to put him down again played right into Algieri's hands. He stuck with the jab and was able to mix in those other punches. Pacquiao's much more herky-jerky. He's great at leaping in and leaping out. They teach a great step back and counter move at the wild card and to punch off and move out in angles. Manny can wait around a little bit. And you know, if Algieri is first, he can dictate this fight. But you're right. I think he's going to be reaching at times and hitting air at times where he was expecting if we're expecting Provodnikov, we're not going to get that. And I think every benefit of the doubt that he was getting in his home area on the Eastern Seaboard, he's not going to get that in Macau. So I think it's going to be a very close fight, a hotly contested fight, but they're going to judge it on Manny Pacquiao's more spectacular, bigger shots versus the volume and constant work of Algieri. I got Pacquiao by majority decision in this one.
Wow, you know what? I got Pacquiao, but I don't have it quite that close, and I'm very fond of Chris Algieri personally. I just don't know if he has the firepower. Gabe, if Manny Pacquiao, whether it's by knockout or by decision, if he thoroughly dominates Chris Algieri, I think it'll show that he's still a premier prize fighter because I think it's going to take a pretty good guy to dominate, not just win, but dominate against Algieri. In the big scope of things, how much credit would you give Manny for doing such, being a conclusive victor on Saturday night?
Oh, I'd give him a lot. I think, you know, I mean, I'm kind of like second-guessing myself because I wanted to pick Algieri. But the more, you know, I've been breaking it down and looking at it, and you made great points, I just see it that way. I think logic dictates it, that Pacquiao should win. But if he's able to dominate a style that's this difficult, a guy that I think is legit, then I think this is what this fight's for. Then we start talking about that other fight, the Mayweather fight. I think that's what this is for. Is
do we have to,
style?
Gabe?
Not really.
Gabe, do we have to?
Not really, but I don't think it's going to happen. I actually wrote a piece today, Gary Randall, a commission need a piece to tell me why this is going to be a you know, Pacquiao Mayweather's $100 pay-per-view. And I'm like, I'll tell you why it's going to be that and why it won't happen and why it shouldn't happen, because I don't think it will. But I think the goal is to kind of rehab Manny's image a little bit and show that he could take on a boxing style, a difficult guy, and be a viable fighter, trying to move away from the ghost of being, you know, of Marquez, who iced him.
You know what's interesting? In the last couple of fights, whether it's Mayweather or Pacquiao, there had been a quote-unquote fatigue. We had talked about these guys, whether they were fighting each other or not, so much, and it was almost in rote. But there's been so little heard from Manny because his camp was in the Philippines. Now, when people ask me, Steve, what do you know about Manny's camp? How's he looking? I could lie about it and pretend that I knew, but quite frankly, I didn't punch my passport and take that flight. The only people that probably know the physical and mental condition of Manny Pacquiao are Justin Fortune, Boo Boy Fernandez, Freddie Roach, and maybe Mike Conn. Everyone else is just speculating. And I wonder, at this stage of his life and career, can Manny Pacquiao do the routine and make it look spectacular? Because he's expected to win. Again, the wise guys in Las Vegas, the odds makers, have him a big favorite for a reason. And I said part of the deal of being a great fighter, and what separates the great fighters from the good fighters, the pretty good fighters, and the near great fighters, is the ability to dominate guys beneath them. In other words, if you're a 9 or a 10, you squash the 7s and 8s and the 6s. I want to see if he is still that guy, because there are certain fights, and Mayweather understands this dynamic, especially against Maidana the first fight. Sometimes, Gabe, when you're in that position and you're at the very top of the food chain, Gabe, it's not if you win, it's how you win. In other words, you're judged against yourself.
There's no doubt. And you know, I think we've been victim of this sometimes. Certainly I was when I was, you know, on the beat in Los Angeles. When you see too much of one guy and you don't see the other guy, you start to get really convinced. And I think that's why I'm second-guessing myself. Because I've seen nothing but Algieri. And I know Ryan Zingali, a guy I respect, is out there in the Philippines. But I don't know if Ryan has seen him the way you and I have seen Manny, through his prime years, through the Hatton time. And I don't know if you can tell the difference from just seeing him from these kind of later stage camps versus, you know, what we saw at the wild card during his peak. And people, you know, when he hasn't knocked anybody out since, he hasn't stopped anybody since Margarito, it was a fight before that, but Cotto, and he hasn't iced anybody since Ricky Hatton. That's 2009. So I kind of wonder what Manny has, and if it's been that guys are bigger. Is Algieri a guy they brought in? Because, you know, he's been stopped before, but I think as a kickboxer or a martial artist, are they bringing him in for that reason? Is this a mirage? Or is this, I mean, Manny's 35, which is ancient for a small fighter. I think this is a real fight. I just kind of wonder, you know, with Bruce Trampler and Bob Arum, it's always, you know, are they hiding something? Or are they just giving us the last little bits of Manny Pacquiao, and maybe they get a piece of Chris Algieri if he wins? I mean, I know there's a rematch clause. It's a very intriguing fight. I don't care what anybody says.
If you want to call in, you can do so at 347-215-7598. Tell us, who do you like, Manny Pacquiao, or do you like the upset special with Chris Algieri? Also, let us know, where does this win, or what does this win tell us about Manny Pacquiao circa 2014? Gabe, from Hamburg, Germany, Dr. Steel Hammer. It fell, and it fell with impunity. The heavyweight title of the world will not switch hands, and quite frankly, I don't think it's going to switch hands for a while. Vladimir Klitschko moves to 63-3, scoring his 53rd stoppage, knocking out Kubrat Pulev in 5. And, you know, the knock on Klitschko, and I've always thought it was a bit of a double standard, that, yeah, he wins, yeah, he's dominant, but he's boring. as a lot of fighters on these vaunted pound-for-pound lists are exactly the most entertaining fighters you'll ever see. Gabe, I am not going to pick against any heavyweight against, you know what, even Vitaly Klitschko in retirement till I actually see it. Because quite frankly, I don't see a guy right now that I would favor or even make a small underdog against Klitschko.
Yeah, you know, I don't. I think that, you know, the longer that the Klitschkos stayed off the pound for pound list, as they kept piling up victories, and all you can do is beat the guys in your era, and that's certainly what they've done. They're actually heading into, you know, Vladimir's heading into other eras now with these new crop of opponents that are getting ready for him. You know, David Price might have been a guy that could have gotten there. You know, Dan Raphael's prospect of the year, and then immediately got knocked out by a journeyman. You got to take on the guys that are available, and Klitschko has done that, and he's dominated them. And in this fight, which everybody said, you know, was, oh, this is going to be his toughest test, this Pulev guy, I think people like to be that guy that knows the guy that nobody's seen, or that Euro guy that, oh, he's really, you know, when he gets to the big stage. And you and I weren't fooled at all last week. We were like, this guy's going to get iced. He's going to get knocked down. He's going to get stopped fast. And that's what happened. I think, you know, when you don't take these guys into consideration, their overall skill, his ability to keep range. I know Vladimir caught a couple in the first round and looked a little shaky, but I think people overreact when he gets hit. He certainly turned things around pretty fast in that round and just dominated throughout and then got the guy out of there in exciting fashion. I love that leaping left hook that he's starting to use now. It was just a great performance. It was exciting. It was nice to see, you know, this kind of fight as he's heading into, I think it was a three-fight deal with HBO, where he might be taking on some of these new generation names. We really need this right now in the heavyweight division, in boxing in general.
It's interesting. His preferred choice of weapon, in many respects, he was like the Lombardi Packers. You knew what was coming, the power sweep, and you still couldn't do a damn thing to stop it. Well, with Vitaly Klitschko, he had a very basic offensive attack, either the jab or the jab right hand, and with a lot of grabbing in between.
Yeah.
But to now add the left hook and to blow out a guy, it's impressive. And it's a dominant performance. And if you look at the sheer numbers and the consistency, and people can keep saying that they're not fighting anybody, I would not disagree. But then I ask you to examine the heavyweight run of one of the greatest ever, the Brown Bomber, Joe Louis, whose level of competition was so bad, it was largely known as the Bum of the Month Club. This guy is 63-3. Here's the way I look at it. I think he has to be considered among the top 10-ish heavyweights of all time. Now, as for the greatest ever, now he's a physical nightmare, but bodies change, physicality changes. I think the losses to Lehman Brewster, Corey Sanders, and Ross Purity, at that point, that's where you're saying, that's where he's probably not in the upper echelon. But let's get this very clear, Gabe. At 6'6", with this type of strength, speed, and dedication, this guy, win, lose, or draw, is a tough matchup for anyone, I believe, in the history of heavyweight boxing.
There's no question. There's no question. And that's, and to me, that's really pound for pound. I mean, you can look at it and say, well, you know, geez, I mean, Joe Louis was like, he's a very big heavyweight. He's not a big, Rocky Marciano was not a big heavyweight. I don't even think there were 200-pounders. But you look at, for me, it's the boxing skill. I think there's something to be said that for a guy that knows, I've got power on both hands, and I just need to keep it simple, box at a distance. When a guy gets close to me, I'll smother him. I think he would be a physical problem with you know, all things being equal, which is what pound for pound is really about. But then, you know, he's also got the other side of it, in that there's longevity. And coming back from adversity, I mean, like Joe Louis, who got knocked out in his career, he's come back to be very, very dominant and to be a problem for just about anybody, you know, that's come to challenge him. So, you know, is he one of the greatest ever? I mean, those are, I'll leave those arguments for, you know, historians and guys with beards. But for me, you know, I've been a fan of Klitschko for a long, long time. And I know there's been some really boring fights, but I'm excited to see this next phase, because I think he's, you know, especially in this era, we just had a 50-year-old fight last weekend. I think he can be around for as long as he wants to with this crop of heavyweights. I mean, I don't think any of them are going to really develop to a point where they're going to be too experienced for him. I think it's going to be about physical matchups, and I think he matches up great with all of them.
April 10th, 2004, Gabe, I was actually at the Mandalay Bay when he lost his last fight to Lehman Brewster, where he basically crawled across the ring after hitting the canvas, and they had to stop the fight right there. And if you would have told me, Steve, from this point forward, for a full decade, he will not lose, and he's going to just absolutely dominate the heavyweight division in almost an unprecedented fashion in many respects. I would have given you a million-to-one odds, but that is precisely what him and his brother did. They were a two-headed monster that put a stranglehold on this, and we'll see. Will he be still fighting in the King of the Hill while the likes of Anthony Joshua and even Tyson Fury, or who are our guys, Bermain Stiverne, Deontay Wilder? I think that'd be fascinating. If he could clean out that quartet of guys or that generation, then I think you say, we're going to have to reexamine and where this particular individual stands in the heavyweight hierarchy. Let's go to some of the tweets before we get to the calls. Again, that number, 347-215-7598. And we ask you, if Vladimir Klitschko and his brother were American and they were corn-fed white bread, would their perception of the Klitschko brothers be different than it is now? Here's one from Tyler Cruz. With HBO showing Shannon Briggs during the Klitschko fight, are they setting a fight between the two for Vlad's next HBO appearance? Gabe, given the fact that Briggs, on one hand, has created a lot of attention to his credit, but has also faced literally Z-level competition, would you approve that fight if you're the HBO brass?
That's a tough question.
That's a tough one, isn't it? Because he would get ratings. Briggs is an American. He's mouthy. We know who he is. And he would be very promotable, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and it's not like they've never had something like that on their network before. You know, they've had mismatches. They can't claim ageism. They just had a 50-year-old guy fight on their network. Stranger fights have happened. We interviewed Briggs on Leave It in the Ring a couple weeks back. And he kind of had me convinced at the end of it. I mean, he's just a really good self-marketer, but, you know, why not? You know, I mean, it's not like Klitschko's super young. It's not like a 21-year-old Mike Tyson and they're feeding him, you know, an old Larry Holmes or something. I don't know. I'd watch it. I guess I'd just put it that way. I'd watch it.
If Shannon Briggs got that fight, no matter what you think of his merit or if he deserves it, if he was actually able to punch that lottery ticket, it would be one of the greatest jobs of marketing, maybe this side of Archie Moore. It's an unbelievable job. I mean, his next job after boxing should be on Madison Avenue working in the advertising business. Here was another one from Tyler Cruz. He says, this you're going to love this one, Gabe. James Kirkland was giving interviews in San Antonio. One reporter asked if he was still training with Ann Wolfe. He had no comment, Gabe.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of off the record on that one. But it just seems – I don't think they're training together. And I think the last I talked to them, you know, because I had heard a couple days before that the fight with Rosado was off. They were, you know, just James being James. And I don't think the split is official, but I just think they're not really getting
Gabe.
Each other.
Gabe, if this was a marriage, not only are they sleeping in separate beds or separate bedrooms, one person has moved out. They're living at the hotel, motel, Holiday Inn, and they have called Marvin Mitchum, the divorce lawyer. We know where this is heading, okay? We don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to really investigate further the breadth of this relationship. Here's one from Matthew Ritchie. Who do you want to see Klitschko fight next? Him versus Tyson Fury would be a fun heavyweight fight, pre-fight and during the fight. Gabe, I don't disagree. And I'll say one thing. Kathy Duva has always said about the Klitschkos, Steve, they don't fight a lot of guys that could look them in the eye. I think for Fury's size alone, it'd be a more interesting fight than most of these matchups.
I'd love that fight. I think that would be a nice matchup. I think the guy could sell it. I think you easily could tell to the casual fan who the quote-unquote villain is and who the good guy is. It'd just be a great fight for boxing. I think it could do huge numbers in the UK. You know, just kind of jumping back quick to Ann Wolfe, I think, too, a big part of this is that once she's tired of James going James, but she wants to be defined as Ann Wolfe. She's a Hall of Fame champion in her own right in women's boxing, certainly. One of the greatest fighters ever in women's boxing. But she's also a trainer that's got a ton of other fighters that she's developing, including Travelle Black Magic Mazion, who's with Golden Boy, who's really nice-looking, a lightweight prospect. So I think there's a little bit of that, of kind of like tired of being defined by James, you know?
Or how about this? How about tired of, like, James? I mean, some relationships just run their course, and a lot of trainers simply don't want to be with the fighter who they don't know if it's a coin flip or not, if their guy's going to actually show up to the gym and get in their day's work. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, give us your Pacquiao Algeri predictions. Do you have the guts and the gumption to order the upset special? Gabe, let's go.
All right. In the 818, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe, Steve, what's going on, guys? Jose, how you guys doing?
Jose, welcome to the next round.
Hey, I just want to give my prediction on this weekend's fight. I'm going to take Manny Pacquiao by decision. I don't think Algeri really has it in him to be able to go steal a decision from Pacquiao, and I'm a little concerned about the eye. I don't know if you guys have been watching 24/7, but that eye just doesn't look 100% to me.
You know what? That is certainly an issue, and Manny can still thump. Don't get that twisted. This guy is still what I'd call a very good offensive fighter. Jose, my question is this. Are you going to buy the fight on pay-per-view?
Absolutely not. I'll probably be checking it out on the radio, Steve.
Okay. Is there any particular reason why? Is it a budgetary issue, or you just feel this fight is not worth my money?
I don't think it's worth the money. You know, had this been on regular HBO Championship Boxing, I'd be willing to check it out. But, you know, the fact that I've got to pay for somebody who was relatively unknown one fight ago, you know, it just doesn't seem justified to me.
Right. Okay. Jose, anything else?
No, it'll be it, fellas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have an open phone line, 347-215-7598. And, Gabe, I'll make a prediction right now, and maybe I'll be completely wrong. I think this fight does a little bit better than Brandon Rios because I think Algeri is a little bit more sellable, and he is an East Coast figure, and New York is the number one market for pay-per-view as it relates to boxing. I don't see this doing over $600,000 pay-per-view buys as Bob Arum is forecasting.
Yeah, no. I think it's like a 500 to 600, somewhere in there, just because they've really saturated the market with this guy. And like you said, you know, the New York market. But no, I don't think this is – I don't think it'll be a total failure, but I don't think, you know, the expectations are terribly high. But back to the phone lines. And incidentally, Klitschko Brewster was one of the last times I bet on a fight. I made a grip on Brewster. I just had a feeling. And the 530, you're live on the next round.
Hello, this is Ringside Robert, guys, and I got a few things to comment on. First of all, the two heavyweights I want to see Klitschko fight are is Dante Wilder and Tyson Fury. I want to see both of those fights. As far as Manny Pacquiao, Chris Algeri, I'm picking the upset special. I think Algeri's size and reach and movement is going to give Manny Pacquiao issues. But on the other hand, I hope in one way that I'm wrong because I'm one of the ones that wants to see the fight that everybody's tired of. I eventually want to see those two get in the ring somehow, some way, because I don't think that talk will ever go away until they eventually do. There has to be enough money out there in the sport of boxing to make this fight eventually come off. So on one hand, I want to see Algeri upset the apple cart, but on the other hand, if Manny wins, you know, I want him to win in a fashion where people will start talking about Floyd and Manny getting in the ring. And I think this fight eventually has to happen. The only way it won't happen is one of them decides to retire, so it doesn't happen.
Gabe, you're the one who wrote the article regarding this fantasy fight that may never happen. Your thoughts?
When you look at the idea of how much, you know, there's got to be enough money in boxing. I'm like, how much does courage cost? But I also think, both guys are going to make, what, $50 million, maybe more? They're going to be asking for that. My piece just kind of concedes all the obstacles. Like, let's forget that Floyd has two fights left on his, you know, Showtime contract, guaranteed $32 million per fight. Forget that he, you know, him and Bob Arum hate each other, or that Al Haymon also and Arum don't get along. All that stuff that get in the way, the drug testing. Let's say Manny's just like, you know, do it up until the moment that I walk into the ring. Maybe Manny even leaves Top Rank and goes over and signs with Floyd to make this fight happen. All that stuff you concede. Just the sheer amount of money that they're both going to want And you look at how much Floyd fights cost now. I mean, Maidana made, what, $3 million for his last fight to Floyd's $32 million, just the guaranteed base salaries. And we had to pay almost $80 for the HD, unless you watch it on the radio. For this fight, they're going to both want, like, closer to $50 million apiece, plus upside. How much is that going to cost fight fans? $100? More than that? I just don't know. I mean, when you say there's enough money in boxing, I'm like, is there enough money for boxing fans? Because that's just one pay-per-view. What about the rest of the year? We'd all be saving up just to see one fight. I just don't see it happening.
Okay, well, I concede your points because let's look at this year's pay-per-view, the Algeri Pacquiao pay-per-view. This will be the seventh pay-per-view this year, if I did my math correctly.
Yeah.
And you are right. Yeah, if Floyd and Manny take place and they charge more for that pay-per-view than the other, it'll hurt, say, a Cotto Canelo pay-per-view or a Cotto Triple G pay-per-view because everybody will be focused on getting Pacquiao Mayweather. So you are right in that marketing sense. And I am going to buy the Algeri fight because I think it's worth watching. Algeri, he beat Emmanuel Taylor. He went in against Provotnikov and got knocked down, you know, twice, even though the second knockdown he took a knee. But he managed to get up and put on a successful show for 11 rounds. I think he earned his shot, and, you know, I think true boxing fans should support this.
Okay, Robbie, again, thank
That's
you for joining us. Appreciate the call.
No problem, guys. I'll be here every week.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. 347-215-7598. Gabe, if you couldn't make this fight at its apex, which was 2010 to 2011, and listen, I understand there have been other fights that have taken place long past their logical expiration date, such as Lennox Lewis against Mike Tyson in 2002, even Hagler-Hearns was probably a couple years too late. The difference is you clearly have a division in this sport that has simply not existed before, whether we're talking about networks, advisors, and former clients of promoters who simply don't want to break bread. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
In the 718, you're live on the next round. 718.
Hey, guys, how are you? This is Domingo from New York.
Domingo, welcome aboard.
Listen, guys. Klitschko could win his next 30 fights, being 93-0 with 83 knockouts, 93-3. And I don't think he cracked my top 15 all-time heavyweights.
Hold on. Okay, then, Domingo, name me 15 right now, then.
Huh?
Name me 15, then.
Well, I could name you the first 10.
give me those 10.
Ali, Joe Louis.
Okay.
From there, George Foreman, Larry Holmes. There's
okay.
Mike Tyson. There's Lennox Lewis.
I'm telling you, it's
like
not
Joe
that
Major.
Easy. Some of those names.
A few others there. But what I'm trying to say is the way he lost in those three fights against very limited opponents, the way he ran for his life when he beat Simon Peter, and the way he fought Davey Hayes, I cannot picture him in greatness. I'm saying, just look at those five fights. This guy fights scared, and he really, the only reason he's there is because he hasn't fought somebody that could just land one punch. There's not really nobody there that has, you know, the ring generalship, the technique that could come and clip him. Because I think he's just one right hand away from being knocked out. I think if Wilder lands that punch on the first round, he's out. He wins it.
Domingo, but to the point I made earlier, let's say he faces Wilder. Let's say he faces Tyson Fury. Let's say he faces Anthony Joshua. And again, that's a bit of a long shot. And if he vanquishes them, you're telling me that doesn't change your perception at all?
No, because they're severely limited, Steve. Listen, Mike Tyson in the late 80s, he fought a bunch of fighters. People say now they were all junkies. But they at least were, you know, they were ring smart. They were technically sound, you know. There were some good punchers there. I don't think he has – I think his level of opposition is even much weaker than than Joe Louis or Larry Holmes.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Really? Two-ton Tony weak. Galento and guys like, really, Domingo?
I think so. I'm saying my chances for Larry Holmes. He fought Razor Ruddock. He fought Trevor Belfort. All these guys, I could envision beating Vladimir Klitschko.
That I don't disagree with. But when it comes to Joe Louis, if you look at some of those guys that he faced and just look at their pictures, you'd be like, wow. I mean, listen, they were tough guys from that era, but physically they were very, very limited. Listen, I am not taking anything away from the Brown Bomber. He's one of the most important figures in boxing history. But there seems to be a romanticization of certain eras.
Listen, Joe Louis fought Jersey Joe Walker. He fought Max Schmeling. He fought a few big fighters.
He got knocked out by Max Schmeling the first time.
But then what happened next?
Billy Kahn, who was 169 pounds, was basically 4 minutes from beating him. I'm just saying, I think the Klitschkos are a little bit of a victim of a perception. Now, again, I don't have them in my all-time greatest because, again, Lehman Brewster, Corey Sanders, Ross Purity. But if you look at the body of work, I think you have to at least give them respect for consistency and longevity.
I guess you have to, but I think at the time that he fights fighters like let's say Povetnikov, the Russian guy, he was pretty good fighter, but by the time he fought him, he didn't have Teddy Allen. There's a reason why Teddy Allen was not with this guy.
You say that like it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Huh?
Having Teddy isn't exactly a good thing. I think Teddy did more harm than good with Povetkin. I'm not a Teddy guy at all. I think he's gotten kind of lucky with some people, and he's really made a career out of saying, "Hey, I used to work with Mike Tyson, but I got fired for being inappropriate, pulling a gun on one of my people that I was supposed to be taking care of, regardless of what Mike did, which probably wasn't right." And Mike talks about it, but that's Teddy's claim to fame with me. I mean, I always looked at him, with his champion and Michael Moore, like he was just ruining the guy. Like he just kind of got in his head, made a guy that was already kind of a head case a little bit worse. I just don't see it. I mean, Mike Tyson lost to a 42-1 underdog, a guy that was such a dog, nobody was taking bets on it, actually.
But you saw that fight. I think on that day, Buster Douglas could have beating a lot of fighters. The guy was on his game.
Yeah.
Jabbing, punching, moving, his feet was great. I'm saying Vladimir has not fought a fighter like Buster Douglas fought on that night.
And by the way, you blame him for the hay fight? It took two not to tango there. There's an old-timer saying about fights like that, Domingo. One guy was afraid and the other guy was happy for it. You just can't put all the blame on that fight on Dr. Steelhammer. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not putting the fight. Listen, that was the last time I really wanted to see a fight, the Hayes and Klitschko. But remember, we're talking about Klitschko as an all-time great. Hayes was there for the taking. If Evander Holyfield would have fought him, they would have taken him out. And what I saw from Vladimir was that he was scared the whole fight. And literally, he just did enough to win the decision.
All right. Domingo, who's your pick, Pacquiao or Algieri, Saturday night?
Well, guys, I hope Pacquiao because I'm still dreaming for that Pacquiao-Mayweather, even if it doesn't happen. Oh, by the way, where's your article that you posted, Gabe?
Oh, on socialunderground.com. It was just
you have it on your Twitter?
Yeah, it's on my Twitter. It's between the drone strikes and the NSA stuff. Cool. All right, man.
Thanks.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We're just rolling through our calls here. A lot of you on the line. Gabe, let's get to them.
All right. And to the Holyfield would have taken him out, Bert Kripler, There's always that guy that struggle with.
Yeah.
860, you're live on the next round.
What's up, guys? Can you hear me?
Yeah, CT,
yes.
Welcome aboard.
Hey, what's up? I can hear both you guys' points on the fight this weekend because I do see some abilities that Algieri does that will give Pacquiao some trouble. But I think all in all, the angles and just the rhythm, I don't think Algieri's going to pick up on Pacquiao. I think the rhythm is going to have a lot to do with it, with his bouncing in and out style. But I will say that Algieri is very mentally tough. He does, mentally seem like he's ready for the fight, and that can bring, into the fight mentally. But I just think, his type of foot movement is a little different from someone like Mayweather, because if you look at how Jerry's moving, he kind of keeps his, you know, his gloves kind of up against his head, and he leans on the ropes a little bit too much. He can stay in the middle and box, but I noticed against Prudnikov, he moved against the ropes a little bit too much, and I think that's very bad against someone like Pacquiao. I think the speed will have a little bit to do with it, and just the angles and the way Pacquiao punches with odd, you know, odd angles. I think if Jerry uses the jab and turns, you know, uses his ability to turn and move, you know, he's got to be on his feet, like, throughout the whole fight, you know, move laterally, you know, give Pacquiao something to think about, you know, just move laterally. Yeah.
CT, here's the something you reminded me of that I neglected to mention before. When it comes to a technical standpoint of how both guys are going to operate in contrast to each other, Provodnikov and Pacquiao, the next feint that Provodnikov throws will be his first. And that's one of the ways that Manny Pacquiao really accentuates his own quickness and his ability to accelerate is by feinting. Now, against Marquez in his last fight, he feinted his way right into a knockout, but that was a perfect timing by a brilliant counterpuncher. I don't see Algieri at that level, and he's not as powerful as Marquez is right now. I think one of the issues is if this fight gets underneath Chris Algieri's airspace and he breaches it, Manny Pacquiao, and he starts letting those hands go, I expect Manny Pacquiao to actually attack the body a lot, because I know one thing that Freddie Roach has always believed in. You face these tall guys with the lean, long torsos, you keep attacking that body. And so everyone's talking about how is Algieri going to react to the first good left hand to the chin. You can also ask, how is he going to react to the first salvo of body shots downstairs? I think Manny Pacquiao, just my gut feel, I still think he has a lot left. And let's face it, this guy probably needs the money. So if he wants to keep this train going in Asia, he better be motivated.
Yeah, and he definitely has a very strong – I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. It's also, you know, Justin Fortune. This is, you know, the second camp back. I think he's had more time this time with Manny to work with him and get him in shape, get to know where his body is now after all these years, you know, being apart. I think that, you know, when you inject something new but kind of old – and familiar, I think that can be good for Manny. I think it's always important, and just something Justin really understands. I think Freddie does too, of kind of changing things up a little bit with the fighter in terms of routine in order to kind of shock the body, shock the mind, and keep it fresh. You know, you look at the two top superstars, Floyd and Mayweather, or Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, and the kind of guys they're facing. Manny's still facing kind of fresh, relevant guys that are challenges here. I'm not exactly seeing that with Mayweather fighting a Maidana, who we've seen beaten before. Algieri is an altogether new puzzle for Manny. At this stage of his career, it's to be commended. I think it's one reason that you may not want to watch it on the radio, but instead buy it.
Yeah.
CT, anything else?
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up the way Algieri kind of lets the space, you know, he kind of lets he's got the distance that he can use, but he normally, like, lets the person get a little bit too close to him, and I think that's going to play a big part. And I think Pacquiao's going to get a couple of knockdowns in this fight. I see maybe Pacquiao late round stoppage.
Okay, CT, we got to run. Thank you for the call.
Sweet.
Thank you.
Right.
And, Gabe, hold on. We got to go to our man Amilcar. He's at dinner, and he's about to have the tomato soup thrown at him. So let's go to the 647 prefix.
You got it. 647, Amilcar, you're live on the next round.
Yeah, good evening, Gabe. Good evening, Steve. Thanks for letting me jump on here. I appreciate it.
And by the
it.
Way, Amilcar, what is the soup of the day at this establishment that you're dining at?
It's actually a Greek restaurant.
Okay.
Justin is polishing off a pretty tasty dinner.
Mm.
But the company I'm with is giving me dirty looks. And I've always thought that people talk on the phone at restaurants are assholes. So I know it's going to be hypocritical for me to make that statement in the future. But I just really enjoy the show as always, and I wanted to chime in on a couple of things.
Yes, go ahead.
I'd like your thoughts on this, Steve, because I know you know the business of boxing probably better than anybody else. But it's something that's been intriguing to me in the promotion of the Algieri-Pacquiao fight. Chris Algieri's, like, he's of Argentinian descent, right? And I know he speaks fluent Spanish. So it's interesting to me that he's being marketed as, like, the white guy from Long Island, that they're not really, you know, emphasizing the fact that he's also, you know, Latino, who come in all shades, colors, and regions of that region. So what do you think is the reason for that, that they're not really emphasizing that?
Oh, easy. They want to go with the white guy angle. I mean, he's a white guy that's good-looking, and he's very, very, very articulate, well-spoken, he's educated. So they're saying, you know what? We don't want all that other stuff, because let's face it, the Argentinians, they're not really what you'd call, like, the Puerto Ricans or Mexicans. You know, they don't have a great fan base. And if you have a white guy that's good-looking and more than willing to fill up our notebooks and our tape recorders, just run with that. Sometimes, Amilcar, just keep it simple. And the white card, if you pull that out, sometimes that alone is enough, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the Argentinians did come out for Martinez, but it took a while. You know, I remember seeing them against Williams, you know, back east, the rematch. And it was like, what, 3,500, something like that. When they finally got to Vegas, they came out for the Chavez fight. It was a tremendous atmosphere, but it wasn't like they filled the place. It was, I don't know, maybe 60-40, 70-30. They were loud. I kind of agree with Steve. It's not like, oh, we've got to go after the Argentinian market. It's not really a market, I don't think.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, being somebody who's, you know, Latino myself, I'm also black, but, I mean, I watch Univision, Televis, all of these channels, and you'd think that they'd be putting Chris Algieri out there speaking Spanish, promoting the fight, kind of utilizing him the way De La Hoya was being promoted at Top Rank back when I was
growing
up.
Yeah, but you know what the bottom line is?
Like, if
you speak, but Amilcar,
you know,
again, right? Let's keep it simple. If you speak Spanish, you're not getting on Newsday. It's very simple.
Yeah.
This is still a media is still very white dominated in terms of decision makers. It's the God's honest truth. If you're Sergio Martinez, you might get a paragraph. If you're the white guy from Huntington Beach, you're getting a whole section. That's life.
Yeah. I guess so. I can't disagree with that. Another thing I wanted to ask about is Kovalev. And also Jean-Pascal, I think that would be a great fight, and I think that would do really good business in Montreal. I would even travel up to Montreal to go watch it if it ever took place. Do you think that that's a fight that could get made by HBO and by the various promoters?
You know, it's interesting. Kathy Duva mentioned that to me because I think she's basically given up on Adonis Stevenson coming to the table. Pascal's in a good position, guys. Number one, he's the mandatory in the B.C. to Adonis Stevenson, and Yvonne Michel told me last week, we have a date reserved, I believe it's April 2nd at the Bell Center, for him to fight Stevenson should Stevenson get past the December tune-up, which most expect him to. That fight does very, very big business. But at the same time, Ms. Dumas actually said, hey, with Kovalev Pascal, we know our role. We'll absolutely play the B-side in Montreal to Pascal. So the moral of the story is, Pascal's in a pretty good position.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fight that I would definitely want to see. I actually saw Pascal beat up Adonis Stevenson back when they were amateurs in an amateur fight. And I don't think, honestly, that Pascal would have too much difficulty with Stevenson. But given the fact that Stevenson doesn't want to fight him, I would definitely like to see Pascal against Kovalev. I think that would be an explosive fight. I think it was, you know, it would definitely be a very entertaining fight for the fans.
Absolutely. Listen, I think if as it relates to Kovalev, he had a very big victory. But, Gabe, he's still in a position almost like Golovkin. Their stars are rising, but they are not there yet where they can actually be the A-side marquee attractions just yet.
Yeah, basically both Golovkin and Kovalev are like, we've now proven it. We are probably the most scary and dangerous people to fight in the division. And everybody's like, that's great, make money doing other things. But, you know, I think Pascal, if he's going to take that fight, he wants that fight. He wants to be the baddest man out there, you know, and make up for what happened with Hopkins, I think. I think he's a guy that has something to prove in his career, and now he's becoming bankable. I think Stevenson's the odd man out. It seems like he's got the heart to be great, want to be.
Amilcar, we're going to let you get to dessert, okay? We got to run.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. I got to go, and I'll catch the rest on the podcast this week. Thanks again, guys.
Pacquiao or Algieri? Who's just picked?
Pacquiao, by decision.
All right, thank you very much. If you want to call us, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or comment, you can do so at Gabriel_Montoya, at Steve UCN Live. Gabe, who's next?
954, you're live on the next round.
Hello?
Yes,
hello.
Who is this?
Steve, Gabe, Sean from Gainesville.
Hey, what's going on?
What's crack-a-lackin', brother?
Well, you know what? Your nightmare is over. The Mush Champ era is now done and official, at least in a couple weeks.
Yes. I couldn't even express my joy over the phone. It's not possible.
Okay,
we're making amends.
Sean, are you listening on the radio this weekend to Pacquiao Algieri?
Probably not. I moved back to South Florida and I've been working a lot of nights and stuff, so I haven't been keeping up too much, so I don't think so. I wish you could DVR on the radio. That'd be ideal.
Okay.
That really would be. That's a feature. There's an app to create.
So, Sean, what can we do for you?
No, this weekend, I don't know. I think that the money goes on Pacquiao by decision. I just don't think in Macau Algieri is going to win a decision, whether he deserves one or not, truthfully.
We'll see about that. I just have a hard time believing that if the fight is at the competitive nature of Provodnikov and Algieri, and like Provodnikov, it is Manny Pacquiao landing the heavier shots, even if he gets outlanded, it just... All logic, boxing logic, tells you that Manny Pacquiao is going to get his hands raised in victory.
Yeah, I just don't see how it's just the business of boxing is better for the sport if he's the guy at the end that has won. But I don't see to that point either. I mean, it's going to be a tight, hotly contested fight because Provodnikov is slow of foot and slow of hand. He hits heavy and he's relentless. He can take punishment. But Pacquiao is lighter on his feet. He can move his upper body. He really knows how to keep his head just a moving target. He's quicker, more explosive. He may not throw as many punches as he used to, but he's been fairly active in the Bradley fight, although Bradley was his size. Is Manny just going to try to chop the tree down and go at the body? Is that going to count? With the judges, body punches sometimes get ignored. Will he hurt his hands on Algieri's elbows? Because he's going to be guarding those ribs that's going to be the clear strategy. But I find it hard to believe, to envision a fight where Algieri is just Larry Holmes in there, not getting touched and just piston jab all night long, keeping it in the center of the ring and dominating Manny. I don't see
Gabe,
that fight.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, in my opinion, the key to victory for Algieri is to keep a long, stiff jab on him the whole night. I just don't think Pacquiao's getting jabbed up all night,
And
it's not
going to
happen. He's too fleet of foot. So,
yeah,
anyway, guys.
Too shifty.
Yeah. He's still got it. I think all the talk about him being washed up and old after the Marquez knockout was just shock, like the shock effect. I think he's good to go still. And at this point, I would favor him over Floyd if he looks good this weekend.
All right. Sean, anything else we could do for you?
Listen, guys, about 8 months ago, I called up and I said Shannon Briggs is back in the game. You guys laughed at me and chewed me off the phone that call. All right? Now, Klitschko gets another BS win. Klitschko is looking okay. Is he going to do what he always does and give Shannon Briggs the fight that he deserves? He's the people's champion. Is he going to give him that fight? It's an easy fight for him. Why isn't this going to happen?
Hold on, Sean. Which people is he the champion of, Shannon Briggs, outside of Brownsville?
Relax. He reps Broward County right down here. I can go to Fort Lauderdale Beach and see him at the bar. He's probably there. Let's go, champ.
I'm going with it, man. I just want to see it I just want to see the next video. Where is he going to show up next? Is he going to show up in the 20? What's going to happen?
24/7 Klitschko Briggs. I can't wait. See you guys later.
Sean, thank you very much. At the top of the hour, we'll go through some news and notes and some of the weekend results from across the world. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
Ooh, 347. You've been on for a long time. 347. You're live on the next round. 347. Boom. You are the first knockdown of the show. Let's see. In the 650, you're live on the next round. 650.
Two in a row.
All right. See, seven. There's a lot of calls tonight, so we're. Let's see, 787. You're live on the next round. 787. Nothing. All right. 510. You're live on the next round. 510.
Just listening, my brother.
Okay.
Scott, what's going on? Who is this? Oh, okay. All right. Just listening. Well,
just listening.
Keep listening.
All right. Sometimes that's the only way you can hear the show. In 111, I think it's a Skype number. You're live on the next round, or maybe overseas.
Okay, let's have a rule. If you're just listening, can you just please, like, download the app and, like, stop taking up the phone line? I'm being dead serious about this. No, I am. Just, like, get a laptop or just download the app. Just come on. You really, I hate to say this.
It is a little easier on the app.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
585, save me, Obi-Wan. You're my only hope. In the 50585.
It's Jake from State Farm. Here to
Jake from State Farm. Hey. What are you wearing? Anyway, go ahead, Jake.
I'm actually in my boxer shorts. And,
well, I bet you look hideous.
I'm rubbing myself with powdered sugar right now.
Ooh. Whoa, hey.
Right. Anyway, obviously, you guys have heard the Daily Mail article. I mean, I'm sorry to bring this up, but it's interesting. The Daily Mail article where Bob Arum is claiming $1 billion for the Mayweather. I'd just like to get you guys' take on that, if you guys haven't already talked about
it. Well, this is a lesson that Larry Merchant once taught me. He said, Steve, I learned this long ago. When managers or promoters or anyone else starts talking about a fight and want to get extra headlines, add an extra zero. Well, Bob's added several extra zeros. Now, if he would have just said $50 million or $100 million, it would have, you know, kind of gotten a little bit of play. But when he replaced the M with a B for billion, he got the desired effect. Bob Arum is being the consummate promoter, and God bless him for it.
Yeah, it was even, you know, like Hopkins mentioning, you know, Triple G or you know, you start mentioning other guys. Like, that last week is always, okay, we've been promoting this thing for a few months. We've had, you know, there's like three different HBO shows, you know, Under the Lights, and then the I don't know, Avocado Half Hour, you know, traveling show, and then 24/7. And you know, they're all just, you know, every angle has been covered. And so now, you start talking about Mayweather again. It's kind of like clockwork in the last week. So I was kind of a little bit loath to write this, you know, and I don't ever really write about boxing that much anymore, if at all. But to me, it's just a fight that's not going to happen. It is. It's just this now. It's just promotions, promoter helper.
I'd like to ask you, who is the most likely, if any, fighter from the Haymon stable to cross over and fight a non-Haymon fighter in 2015? I mean, is it Danny Garcia, whoever?
That's a great question. And by Haymon guy, do you mean full Haymon guys or the half-Haymon guys like Lucas Matisse and Marcos Maidana, who are basically coerced by their former leader at Golden Boy to ink with him? There is a difference. But I'll be honest with you. When it relates to that subject, seeing is believing as it comes to going out there and seeing a crossover of fights.
Well, I think the answer to that question might be what non-Haymon fighter is a mandatory for a Haymon fighter coming up? That's usually how it gets forced, you know, and then we see, you know, the Haymon curse, they call it the Haymon mandatory curse. So every time, you know, one of his fighters that has a belt has a tough mandatory, they tend to lose. So I think that's probably the only way it's going to happen. You know, it's one of the few things that the sanctioning bodies do that seems to, you know, give credence to their whole existence is the mandatory.
Yeah, when that happens, it always reminds me of when Rasheed Wallace used to tell people, "Ball don't lie, ball don't lie." You know, when. But yeah. Also, I'd like to say, Gabe, I don't know how you do. You really think that it's possible for Algeria to get a majority decision loss in Macau? Do you think he'll get the benefit of the doubt that much?
I think. Well, I mean, he just needs to get a judge, right? He just needs to get one guy. I think it's possible. I mean, I think he can. He's got a nice style, and it's a busy style. So sometimes people, you know, they look at an activity and think it's achievement. So I think it's very possible he can get the judge out there. But I don't know. I also tend to think that he might. I was, you know, when this all was announced, I was picking him. I felt like the style was all wrong for Manny, but I just, the way they've pushed him on me, it makes me suspect. You know, when somebody's really pushing you to do something, my tendency is to say no. And that's why I'm going with Manny, but the maturity decision is kind of the residual effects of my original feelings, I guess.
All right, well,
we'll see.
Thanks, guys.
I like to live
dangerous. All right, Jake, thank you very much. We've got another half hour. We go to news and notes here if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, we had a quartet of prospects fight the last few days. Gilberto Ramirez, Oscar Valdez come up victorious in San Antonio and HBO Latino. Joseph Diaz comes up with another victory on Fox Sports 1 Thursday night. Then Erickson Lubin in Pittsburgh struggles mightily, getting knocked to the canvas. Out of these four guys, and they're at different stages, who impressed you the most? And who was the one guy that you said, you need to go over all the way to the right lane, i.e. the slow lane?
Lubin needs to be in the slow lane. I mean, I don't fully see it. You know, I see a good young, strong man. He's got agility. I think he's got power. There's some ability, but he's very raw. He just needs to be polished, brought along slow. It's just his technique kind of widens at times. This unexpectedly, he does that thing that drives me crazy that amateurs will do, where they kind of, like, they'll back off and, like, slide to the side, but they put their hands in the air as they move. I don't know why you would ever make your hands high and wide against an opponent ever. It's a terrible habit. He does it a lot. And there's just so many things wrong. I really like Joseph Diaz. You know, I think JoJo's in supreme condition. He trains with Daryl Hudson. I do wonder about him, you know, his father being kind of inexperienced as a trainer. He's brought him up his whole career. I wonder about that at the higher levels. But I like JoJo. I like his technique. I like how patient and poised he is. As the fight progresses, his technique doesn't waver. He minds his defense. Somewhere in the middle is Valdez, you know, who's coming along. I like the new trainer, and I was remiss in mentioning, thinking he's still the same one last week. Manny Robles. Just reviewing him, just watching the work, and I've watched Manny work up close. I like that match. I think it's going to be a few fights before you fully see everything, but Valdez is tightening up. He's got a nice ceiling, but I like Diaz right now.
You know, one thing I'll say about Diaz, he is sharp, and he's consistent, and he's a better puncher than I anticipated coming out of the amateurs. Erickson Lubin, listen, I work with the Tyson people on the broadcast, and they are pushing this guy hard, and they think he's a prodigy. I think they need to slow down. I think there's a lot of holes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's physically strong. He's only 19, bottom line. I think very, very few fighters, and I'm talking just the very best of any era, whether it's Ray Leonard or Mike Tyson, more recently, maybe there's a better example, Oscar De La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather, and going way back, Wilfred Benitez at age 17. I think you're much more prepared to buy a beer at 21 than to win and defend a title. And Erickson Lubin is not physically strong, and technically for a southpaw, he makes a lot of mistakes, which is why he got hit with that right hand and the left hook once too many times by a very slow Mexican fighter. When I see him 8 fights in, I don't see to myself, in 5 fights, he's ready for a top 10 guy. So I just don't see it. Is there talent?
No.
Yes. But is there an upside? Yes. But do I think that he's the type of guy that you can microwave?
No. Gilberto Ramirez, I like this guy, but I think when he faced Fernando Zuniga, although he looked good, Gabe, against that guy, it's like taking batting practice on slow-pitch softball machine. You're supposed to look good. So do I think he's ready for a Carl Froch or either Durrell? No. But I do think this is another job of Top Rank masterfully crafting what could be a very lucrative career.
I like this kid. You know, I think he doesn't always use his height to his advantage. I think the thing that I was looking at all four guys is where's the jab as the primary weapon, as the thing that tenderizes, that eventually cuts an opponent, that blinds them to set up other big shots. I want to see a jab that sets the tempo throughout the fight. These guys do a lot of standing around and just, you know, I don't know what they're doing, looking at the opponent, waiting for the right moment to explode. All of them could learn how to use the changeup. But I think, you know, Ramirez is nice right now. But I came away from the fight just going, okay, now I want to see him challenge. I want to see somebody punch him in the mouth. I want to see somebody push him around because he's, you know, physically he's imposing. He's got all the punches. I think he's got nice footwork. But he's, I don't feel like I'm being sold something that doesn't really exist. I think there's substance in there. But I want to see
another issue. How is he going to deal with quickness and foot speed? That's the question that I have. But in many respects, he is the antithesis of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. He actually works hard, and I believe there's real ability and there's an actual work ethic. As it relates to Oscar Valdez, like I said last week on these airwaves, I think for his long-term success, it's going to be very simple. Can he be two-thirds as defensively responsible as he is offensively explosive? The offense is easy for him. It's really the other things that I think he's going to have to craft and manufacture and hone over the next few years. If you want to call in, again, that number is 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at Gabriel_Montoya or at SteveUCNLive. This is Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kim on the next round. We're here for another 24 minutes. And here's another fight that I thought was very interesting. Rod Salka, the 10-round decision over Monty Mesa, Clay, then Sammy Vasquez with an explosive first-round knockout. Gabe, I'll say this right now, and I was there ringside as part of the broadcasting crew. Gabe, Pittsburgh, if you develop it the right way and you have a fighter or two, it can actually become a decent boxing market.
Dude, that looked like a great environment there. I mean, that was a fun show to watch, and what a fight that was. I mean, it's proof that it doesn't always have to be, you know, the creme de la creme, you know, skill bowl, that it could be two guys that are hardworking professionals that know how to box and know their limitations. And you know, there's something to be said for the intangible here, that both guys were cut over their eyes. They kept bullying forward. Mesa Clay, he's never in a bad fight. And Rod Salka got the stink of the Garcia mismatch off of him, being just an absolute brawl, and it almost didn't matter who won. I liked Salka. I thought he edged it with cleaner, straighter shots. But Mesa Clay is just a beast in there, man. Going to his body, coming in, bit of a billy goat. And the environment, you could just tell the crowd, you know, the audience can tell when you're bullshitting them and when you're being honest with them. And this fight was as honest as it gets from the offering of the promoters to the efforts of the fighters. It was good stuff.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm becoming a little bit of a believer in Sammy Vasquez. I just don't think he's this novelty act. This guy seems to be able to fight a little bit, Gabe.
Yeah, I like him. I like him. I like that every shot, it was like he just kind of increased the power. Like, oh, I can hit you like that. I can hit you like that. And he just got the dude out of there. And it was you know, a bit of a mismatch, I think. But he did what he had to do. And I like the technique. I think he could bring his hands back to his chin a little better. He's a little wide. And then the finish, I think he needs to be a little careful. He's kind of open for some shots. But, you know, he could fix those things. That's experience. You look back and go, okay, maybe I need to calm down in the finish. But real deal guy. I like him.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598 later on. A couple of news and notes as we wrap up here on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network.
Let's try 347. You're live on the next round. 347.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Mike from Queens.
Mike, what's going on?
What's up, Mike?
What's up? The kid fighting Lomachenko this week, is he any good, or is it just going to be a showcase for Lomachenko?
I think Bob Barker would call that a showcase showdown. I think he's a heavy, heavy favorite here. They're not going to make a real fight for Lomachenko on a situation where it's a pay-per-view undercard, in my opinion.
Okay, because I thought maybe they would give him a little bit of a tougher fight since, you know, he's still young in his professional career, and they want to get him like at a higher professional level. Because even though I think he's a seasoned pro, at the same time, he's still got to learn to fight as a professional. You know, it's only his third or fourth fight, right?
Mike, I don't disagree with you. Even though he has a title, there's still a polar opposite effect as it relates to amateur and pro boxing. And I think Lomachenko is still very good, but I agree. I think this is what you call a seasoning fight.
Okay. And any update on Mikey Garcia? Because I think I read it from you, Steve. You said you heard about him and Bob Arum meeting. Do you know what was the results of that meeting? Or?
They had a meeting at Top Rank, and I believe that was presided over by their president, Todd Rank. The buff. I was told that there was progress made. I think, you know, this has been published, but he dropped a couple of his other claims. Here's the issue. I don't think he had much of a case to begin with, and I believe that if out of the four missing horsemen of Mikey Garcia, Andre Ward, Chavez, and James Kirkland, I would bet that Mikey Garcia probably returns the first, the quickest out of that quartet.
Okay, great, because I like him the most out of all those four. And do you think Mikey Garcia could get back that momentum he had? Because HBO seemed to be really, really with him, and he started to see maybe a little bit of a fan base. Do you think he'll ever be able to regain it, or it's kind of when you lose, you don't get it back?
What do you think, Gabe?
Momentum, it just has to be rebuilt, you know, and I think you can get him going again. It's not like... I wouldn't look at him like a Nonito Donaire, who I think never really quite got momentum. He had that at the time when he tried to, you know, he had the big win, and then he tried to go over to Golden Boy, and that kind of killed his momentum. I don't think he really ever quite got his mojo fully back in terms of building a fan base, you know. He went on to big success, but it was kind of funky. I think with Mikey, though, fans really like him. They respect him. I think, you know, even the Mexican-American community can respect a guy who's not happy with his work situation and decides to sit it out. We have a tradition of that, of standing up to the powers that be. So I think he can get some respect there if he comes out of the deal okay.
But Gabe,
he wins, and he's good.
But Gabe, this is not exactly Julio Cesar Chavez.
No, it's not.
This guy was making over $1 million, and he's not exactly the biggest star in the game. I don't look at him as a father picking strawberries. I thought he had a terrible case. I thought he was misguided in this whole thing. I mean, this was not a guy that was wronged, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with you, Steve. I just think that there's not a lot of love for Bob Arum in the sport. So if somebody can stick it to him a little bit, stand up to him, get a little bit more money out of him or do something, I think he could get some respect out of it. I don't disagree, dude. It was like millionaire problems, dude. Like, really? You're kind of – I'm not a Mike Garcia guy. I think he's boring. So
yeah,
you know, him sitting out, not cramp my style.
That's like a Kardashian complaining that, geez, we only have $10 million in the bank account. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not going to really feel a lot of sympathy for him. But here's what he lost. He lost two fights where he probably would have made about $2.5 million, but he's still only 26. So time is on his side. Before we let you go, Pacquiao, Algeri, what's your pick?
I got probably Pacquiao, late stoppage. But I also just got one quick question. Is this under VADA rules or – VADA drug testing, or is this just regular Macau testing?
There is VADA testing, right, Gabe?
Yep, there is VADA testing, yeah.
From both sides or just Algeri, though?
No, both sides.
Everybody.
Both sides. Yeah, both fighters. This isn't one of those single fighter deals. I think it would have been a bigger story. But, yeah, no. I think I'm not even sure whose idea was it. I know Freddie is a fan of it, and Algeri did it with Provodnikov, so I think it's just everybody agreed it's a good thing.
Okay, yeah, so I'll go Pacquiao lead knockout then.
All right, thank you very much. And here's a tweet from Gary Willis who reminds us, hey, what are your thoughts on Bella versus Cleverly plus the undercard event? You know, this is a grudge match. I'll be honest. This is a fight I'm just going to watch and enjoy. I don't have to make predictions on every fight. Bella and Cleverly simply don't like each other. And you know what? Gabe, those are the fights that I like.
Yeah, it's personal. It's totally personal. The money's like a bonus to these guys, at least to Tony it seems that way. I don't have a pick, really. I kind of lean towards Ballou. I just think he's just a tough son of a bitch, but he, you know, I think Cleverly, he can move, and I don't really know much about them at cruiserweight, at this new weight, so I'm very curious to see who takes it better. And yeah, like you, I'm just gonna kick it and enjoy. That's kind of like just a fight fan's delight.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Up close and personal ask, are you going to call the upset special on Antonio DeMarco to beat Jesse Vargas? Gabe, Jesse Vargas has gone through some changes in his camp. DeMarco is really what I call a natural lightweight. I think Vargas, even without the Las Vegas discount he usually gets from the judges, I think he beats DeMarco in a pretty good fight.
Yeah, I think so. I just don't think that DeMarco's natural to the weight. Now, I know he's with Justin and Freddie, and you know, they can get you up in weight. And DeMarco is somebody that Justin really seems to believe in. And I trust Justin's opinion. You know, maybe I'm a little biased, as I spent years like training in his gym, you know, under him, and so I'm kind of lean towards him. But he's not a guy that is dishonest, you know, and in terms of when he makes a pick and when he assesses something. But Jesse, you know, we'll see. You know, Jesse's looking. He's always been looking, as long as I've known him, and he used to call and leave it in the ring. We wouldn't even call him sometimes. He'd just call into the show to talk. He's a guy that has always been looking for power. We saw him start out, you know, at the Fight Night Club in L.A., Golden Boy shows. And, you know, he looks like the guy, you know, big body for his weight class, nice reach, technique is good, he's aggressive, he's everything you want, but he lacks power. Doesn't have that many knockouts. And I think he's got, like 9 knockouts. He's looking for number 10. And so I think he's gone through a lot of trainers, Robert Alcazar, Ishmael Salas, or Oscar Salas. And now he's in with Roy Jones, and he's training with Memo Heredia. He was up here working briefly with Victor Conte's group, and now he's with Heredia and Roy Jones. And he's looking for that power. And you've seen his body kind of change. Tweeted out pictures that he looks super ripped and ready, and they're doing, you know, new types of weight training and everything, and that's the goal. So I'm going Jesse Vargas, late knockout.
All right, Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
And that fight's not VADA tested. In the 510, you're live on the next round. Yeah, he doesn't do VADA testing, despite what that article said. 510, you're live on the next round. All right, moving fast. We actually did just get an influx of calls, so let me move down to the 707. You're live on the next round. 707.
I'm just listening and enjoying.
All right, man.
You call.
Thank you.
Is that Carl? That was Carl. Okay. Keep going.
It sounded kind of like Carl. Maybe he's chilling.
It did.
5-1. Let me see. Just move around. 703. You're live on the next round. 703.
Hey, what's up, guys? Good evening. This is Louis.
Good evening.
Louis, what's going on?
What's happening, man? I'm calling to eat my crow. I pick Hoskins to beat Kovalev. I got to give it to Kovalev. I was wrong with that one. And, I still want to see Kovalev, though, with some prime fighters over there in that weight class, maybe Jean Pascal. But I like what I saw, and I'm glad he shut me up. It's been a good weight. I literally just called in probably like not long ago, so I missed the whole first hour of the show and wanted to ask you, since I've been unable to watch it, the Pedraza Farinas fight, did you guys talk about it?
Gabe, have you had an opportunity to watch that fight? Because quite frankly, I haven't.
Unfortunately, I haven't. I was doing the play that night, and it was the one. I watched a ton of fights today, and it's the one fight that was like I ran out of time to see. But I will say this: I picked Pedraza to win it. But we can talk about it next week. Unfortunately, I'll talk about it on Leaving in the Ring on Thursday night at 5 p.m. with Dave Duenas on the same network. But yeah, full disclosure. Sorry, for the personal, Lou. You know, I picked the guy. I like the guy. It's just I'm busy being on stage Friday, Saturday nights.
I look forward to hear your take on that particular fight. I've been, quite frankly, been checking it out, or looking for it rather. YouTube, I get nothing. But you know what? I also missed your predictions on Pacquiao Algieri, but I think you've been pretty consistent. Saying that Algieri has a good chance against Pacquiao, right?
Gabe certainly has.
Very, Yeah, I really like that he. I like his chances. I liked him against Provodnikov a bit. You know, he just he's got a tough style, tall, lanky dude. I just think, you know, is this the fight where he you know, it's just gonna be a tough fight for him. He's a different style. Pacquiao is a puzzle all his own, and he's kind of at his best was like a perpetual motion machine, just combinations, moving all around you, darting in and out, shifting his head. And he's gotten better at that over the years, kind of minding his defense even more, especially after what happened to him with Marquez. So I don't think that there's a surprise knockout coming from Algieri. He's going to have to work, and that's probably going to be to his detriment. And he loses a close decision.
Got it. Hey, you know, I like Pacquiao on that fight. And real quick before I go, because I know you have so much time, I really like the format of that Under the Lights show with HBO. It was pretty nice, you know, because it's been a while since I've seen, what do you call it, boxing analysis in, like, prime time TV like that. I know ESPN Deportes has something similar where they bring Juan Manuel Marquez to talk about fights.
I really appreciated that. We're kind of missing in this sport. And I was kind of what I was hoping Fight Game would be. Is that kind of like just X's and O's, you know, analysis, just breaking down a fight. Too much of what's happening these days, in my opinion, is that the promoters are kind of taking over. Like these 24/7s, somewhere along the line, people were convinced that fight fans needed to hear about the lifestyle of the boxers. Like, unless it pertains to the training, I don't really care. I want to know about the fight, how you're preparing for it, all those things. I don't really need to know about your girlfriend or anything else. You know, I just want to know about the fight. And so I think it's maybe that's why we're not always looked at so respectfully by other sports, you know, other sports fans that aren't boxing guys. It's because we don't have that kind of show. So, yeah, I agree with you. It was kind of cool to see the format.
Yeah, Lewis, we got to get going, okay? Thank you for the call. Gabe, let's get to the 3-2-3. This guy's been holding on a very long time waiting to talk to us.
You got it. All right, 3-2-3, you're live on the next round.
What's up, gentlemen? K9, it's the only Sanch over here from Heritage Hall.
Hey, fight on! Fight on!
Yeah. We don't want to get into that. I don't want to get into that. Our season's over. What's going on, fellas? Good weekend of boxing. I think Klitschko, if he was a white American heavyweight, he'd be the talk of the town. He'd be like sweet like apple pie and vanilla bean ice cream. So, you know, I think he's very underrated, he's not going to be appreciated until he's gone.
You know what, much like Larry Holmes and Lennox Lewis, truth be told.
Definitely.
There was a lot of derision over their heavyweight runs, and you look a decade later, and they're almost built up mythically. So I happen to agree with that point.
All right, Pacquiao, Algieri, I don't see Algieri doing enough action to get the decision. And we know he don't have the power to knock out Pacquiao, unless he's going to catch him like Marquez, which I don't see happening. So I see a decision there with Pac-Man. Maybe he can light it up a little bit and give us a little flash of his 2009-2010. But back to the Mikey Garcia, who is giving these guys legal advice? Bob Arum has not lost. And when's the last time Bob Arum lost to a fighter in court?
The last time it wasn't successful for him was the whole De La Hoya case at the start of the century. That's 14 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And again, these guys are listening to people who I think have agendas that are absolutely rooted in a certain fantasy. And the track record speaks for itself. You sit out, things don't really go well in your career. It's really that simple.
Uh-huh. I mean, and De La Hoya had the stature at that time. He was a golden boy. He had enough weight to actually, like, you know, sway opinion. But Mikey Garcia, you know, you should look at Andre Ward. Dan Gustin was undefeated. Andre Ward just lost that movie role to Tony Bellew, too, so I was happy about that.
He lost that, really?
Yeah.
I thought they were both going to be in it. I don't know, because
I interned at NBC Universal with a film company.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing, like, it's back and forth. If, you know, he might price himself out of that, you know what I mean?
You know what I'm hearing? Maybe that company wants an active fighter.
I would believe so, you know. Him and Chavez Jr. And what fight is Chavez Jr. getting ready for? Another court case. Thank you. What's going on with these guys?
Yeah,
I've always said,
you don't want to do your job. You don't want to show up. That's your problem. The game will move on. Next man up.
So
yep, no doubt.
My question is for the day. By the way, I hope you're doing well on that show, Gabe. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, man. It's going very well. I appreciate that.
Wonderful. So what can we expect after the Pacquiao-Algieri dominoes fall, the Khan-Alexander? I'm with the mindset of you, Steve. This fight is not going to happen. It would have happened. It would have happened already. They would have had 2-3 fights if they would have made the $1 billion already if they really wanted to make money.
Here's what I think is going to happen. This is just, again, me guessing. I believe that Jesse Vargas, if he wins, is in the running to face Manny Pacquiao. I've heard that from several sources, and I believe that if Amir Khan wins on December 13th against Devin Alexander, I believe he will be the next opponent for Floyd Mayweather.
Hmm.
I will be
so
buying either of those fights.
I think Alexander's going to get Khan. But
you do?
I hope he does, too.
I think he's kind of turned into a bit of a hard-nosed professional. I think people are – he was undercooked versus Bradley, and he's kind of cooking. And despite how things have gone, you know, like the Porter fight, he's still – I just think he's a tougher dude in the trenches. And maybe Khan will keep away from him and will, you know, be too fast and everything. But I don't know. I kind of have a feeling. I kind of like it. And it's not like if you don't hit Khan solid, nothing happens.
Yeah, yeah. Sanj, we got to get going, okay?
All right, gentlemen.
Fight on.
All right, man.
We have room for a couple of more calls. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines again.
714. You're live on the next round. 714.
Hey, it's Lenny the Fight Smith.
Lenny, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, Lenny?
I just tuned in, guys. I keep getting you guys at the end because I get out of work late. But just wanted to give a quick prediction on this weekend's fight. I think Pacquiao. I think the only way Chris Algieri does anything big against Pacquiao is if he gets to kick him.
Hmm. Last time I checked, the Marquis of Queensbury rules do not allow that, Gabe.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you can lose 2 points and then you get disqualified. So is that 2 kicks? Maybe a knee and a kick? You know, I don't know. I always said if I'd fight Mike Tyson in his prime if I was allowed 2 kicks. You know, so I don't know. Got to do something. Maybe, you know, that's something nobody's really talked about is the gray areas. You know, Pacquiao's not really known as a guy that, like, gets in there, clinches you and mauls you. Not too much of a billy goat, you know, in terms of using his head or an elbow guy. He's not a dirty tricks kind of guy. Algieri, you know, is a guy that's done martial arts his whole life. Kempo is where he started, which is a very legit art and a very tactile art. They do use their hands. I wonder, you know, and with kickboxing and all that, you know, who's got the edge on the inside in the mauling game? And is that going to be something that Algieri will look to use?
I feel like Algieri, his best bet is to just stay the hell away, use his length. I mean, the guy's like a foot taller than Manny Pacquiao. He's got a bigger reach. And maybe if he can last the full 12 and maybe win a judge, but he just doesn't have any power.
And I think that's the problem. Can a guy with no power hold off Manny Pacquiao for 36 minutes? I just don't think so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, even Marquez, who, you know, they went nip, you know, tooth and nail, and he's not known as an explosive, like, you know, one-punch knockout guy, although, you know, the last fight notwithstanding. You know, he was able to do it using smart boxing, counter-punching, moving, but he hit just hard enough to keep Manny's respect. So I don't know, you know, maybe is Algieri like that, you know, can it be knocked down, drag out, and can he just counter all night long? I mean, it's not like it hasn't been done before, but, you know, Manny usually gets the benefit of the doubt in those fights because people like harder, more explosive punching over volume or kind of tricky shots. We'll see.
Lenny, we got to get going, okay?
Thanks, guys.
All right, just a couple minutes here. We want to mention a couple of things. December 20th from Shelton, Washington, there will be a special edition of Showbox featuring Julian Williams. Gabe, we know Stephen Edwards very well. He is very high on this kid. If there's a guy that's going to be, I don't know if you want to call him a breakout star of 2015, but I think Julian Williams, J-Rock, I think is really ready to make his run in 2015.
I really like it. I'm actually going to see him train, I think, tomorrow and tomorrow or Wednesday or both up here at San Carlos. They're in town, going to hang out and train over there at the Undisputed Gym. So I'm looking forward to checking him out, and I agree with you. I like his personality. I like his style. I wonder if he's got the great eraser. I think he's still learning how to use Wow. But if anybody, you know, if I had to tab anybody in that division to kind of become a player within the next year, it would be him.
And finally, it's leaking out. CBS Sports Network, they will start doing boxing on December 13th. I'm hearing various things that there's several different promoters that will have their own shows. And I think it's interesting. You got NBC Sports with Al Heyman, supposedly. Now you have CBS Sports Network. So we'll see where this plays out, Gabe, with all these television entities, and if this actually means that boxing is playing to bigger stages, or, Gabe, is it actually more fractured? That's what we got to find out.
That's a great question. Yeah, that's what we're going to find out. You know, only time will tell.
All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenez. On behalf of Golden Gate Gabe Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.